Some of you know that I have practiced for decades the spiritual discipline of tree climbing. I have surprised neighbors all across the country as I've tumbled out of moving vans and immediately ascended my way to a view of a new heaven and a new earth on my new street. It's a matter of seeking new perspective. Well, today, December 30th, we've all figuratively climbed up to the top of the year, and we've perched way out on the tree limb of 2012, still holding on to the days of Christmastide, remembering the events of this year. The branch sways a bit, doesn't it, under the weight of all of the joys and agonies of these 12 months. From this lofty vantage, we can see a branch very close of 2013 coming to us, with the dropping of a ball and the raising of cheer, with the flip of a calendar page. We can just about see it already, but not quite yet. Or how about another metaphor? This one requiring not a courage of heights, but a courage of imagination. This is a time when we are called to live on the threshold, abiding in the liminal places, not quite in the past, not quite in the future, pitching tent with Emmanuel, who comes to camp out with us. Pausing with our sister Mary to ponder many things in our hearts, a time to recollect back and wonder forward. This is a day for a gem of a story found only in Luke, told with dual perspectives. This is a day where two generations meet, where youth ministers and campus chaplains engage young adults precisely in the contexts of their journeys, where parents and children perplex and irritate one another. Can you imagine? Where professors and students sit in the temple and wrestle with texts and traditions. Some of us live today with Mary on the parental threshold of holding on and letting go. Today, her 12-year-old Jesus stretches out beyond her protection into a world that she already knows is piercingly beautiful and piercingly violent. Mary says today, kids, they grow up so fast. It seems like it was just this past Tuesday when Jesus was born. My baby, and now he's 12, going on 20. Some of us live today with Jesus on the emerging adulthood threshold of, hello world, ready or not, here I come. And yikes, this economy, this multitude of options and yet restrictions. Hello, parents, basement, I'm back. Jesus says today, give me some room at the inn to learn more and become more until I'm really ready to launch. Let's climb into our Lucan story and see the world from one another's perspectives. Let's begin with Mary, revered mother of Jesus. And here in today's gospel, a very real mom. One many of us recognize as we look in the mirror or as we look at a family portrait. Clueless, panicked, relieved, angry, perplexed, astonished, perseverant. All those experiences of parenthood that the owner's manual never mentions. In ancient Roman mythology, Janus is the god of beginnings and transitions, the god of gates, doors, and thresholds. Janus is depicted as a god with dual profiles, once looking to the future and once looking to the past at the same time. January was named in honor of this threshold inhabiting Janus. Now, I confess that I know this not because I am a classic scholar. I know this because I am a mom and I have a college savings plan with a firm called Janus Investments. And this two-faced image of Janus has been stamped on my statements for about a dozen years. For many years, my husband and I have clinked our quarters into the savings plate, fretting over its too slow expansion. Our son Andrew is a high school senior, living on the threshold between high school and college, between clicking submit on the Common App on the computer and the arrival of satisfactorily large and thick acceptance envelopes from colleges. With Mary, I shake my head and remember my son's first day of kindergarten, which seemed like last Tuesday. On that very first day of the big yellow bus, Andrew was treated to a one-on-one visit from the school principal, a kind man who very gently suggested that biting your neighbor's forearm on the bus ride to school was not the best start to an academic career. This I cannot help but remember as my 17-year-old stands before me and requests the car keys. Himself now, a Latin scholar, a fine writer, a person of sterling character, now with advanced bus riding social skills. The forward-facing mom says, "I am so proud of you." The backward-facing Janus mom cannot resist a comment, "But don't bite anybody." Already, but not yet. Mary, today I companion with you as we parent sons so close to stepping into new worlds beyond our doors. I like to think of Mary as the biblical soccer mom. Now, if this image hasn't occurred to you, bear with me for a moment. Her eldest child is 12, and we know from biblical text that she has at least another 6 children by the time Jesus is an adult. 4 of Jesus' brothers are named, and references are made to his unnamed sisters, plural sisters. So that's at least another 6 children. Before I thought about this fact of Mary as parent of 7 or more children, I admit to a more serene image of Mary, quietly pondering, piously robed in blue, sitting beside a well-behaved baby, shining a halo or two in daily housework chores. But now I imagine she and Joseph busy with all the demands of running a large household, bursting with children's activities and religious practices and carpentry projects. I can understand how Jesus got lost in the caravan that day, on the annual pilgrimage to and from Jerusalem for the Passover festival, the original Home Alone screenplay. It was a 150-mile round-trip journey, 3 days there and 3 days back, from the sleepy hill country of Nazareth to the bustling epicenter of Jerusalem, the big city on the bordering the Negev desert on the south. Two places so very different from one another, one experience, and yet understood in 2 very different ways by 2 different people. I imagine that Jesus, the firstborn, had been declaring his desire for independence for some time from good old Ema and Abba. So they relented in their vigilance and they said, "Okay, son, you can travel further back in the caravan with our extended family." I can just see it. Mary probably couldn't stop herself and called out one bit of parting advice, "But Jesus, don't bite anybody." Okay, all you young adults, this is the point when you You totally get to roll your eyes at your parents for all of our awkward comments. It's really more the world's bite that Mary is afraid of. She knows the reality of injustice and state-sanctioned violence. She knows the powerlessness of being young, poor, female, occupied, from the no-account back country. She and Joseph and baby Jesus fled Bethlehem 12 years ago, narrowly escaping the murderous arm of Herod, who commanded that all male babies under the age of 2 be killed. Her family was refugees in Egypt, relying daily on the kindness of strangers, relying daily on the magnificent promises of God. Mary knows that in 2012 alone, over 153,000 refugees fled her neighboring Syria, running from violence and terror. Mary knows that in our country there have been some 30,000 deaths in 2012 from gun violence. Mary knows that the slaughter of innocents is not some ancient biblical tale, but a reality proximate to our lives. Mary weeps for the innocents. Christmas Eve in Webster, New York, the town next door to my recent hometown, two firefighters responded to a residential fire, and they were ambushed and killed by gunshot. One, a 19-year-old, covering for older firefighters so they could be home on Christmas Eve with their families. Mary weeps for the innocents. Sweet babes at an elementary school in Connecticut, an Oregon shopping mall, a Colorado movie theater, an off-campus street in Alston. Off-campus? Our campus. These towns, our towns. These streets, our streets. These children, our precious family. Let us wake up and let our collective tears become a tidal wave of flow, of change, moving our hearts and minds and legislation. And here's why I love Mary. Mary lives on the threshold of the world, seeing all its pain and darkness, and she chooses life. She chooses to be open, to open the door of her heart, a familiar expression of Howard Thurman. Thurman who prays, "Let the door of my heart be swinging." Secured in place by the axis of identity as a beloved child of God, yet swinging open, welcoming love, attentive to splendor, open to new insight. Mary sees the bleakness and chooses to light a candle of blessing rather than curse the darkness. Perhaps Mary is tempted to lock the doors and live in fear, to insist that Jesus never leave the protection of Nazareth again. But Mary does not place an armed guard at every threshold we hold most dear. She does not armor backpacks. Instead, she clothes herself in compassion, kindness, humility, patience, and most of all, love. When Mary and Joseph discover that Jesus is missing, they abruptly change all plans and they rush back to Jerusalem to find their son. They are panicked. After 3 days of searching, they find him in the temple of all places, not in the market squandering shekels on sweet cakes, in the temple, sitting there with the elders deep in discussion about matters of the Torah, holding his own. Mary's panic gives way to relief, gives way to anger. She raises her voice and says, "Son, how could you do this to me? Didn't you know that your father and I have been searching for you?" And Jesus answers her, "Why were you searching for me? Didn't you know I'd be in my father's house? not without a little attitude. In this moment, Mary really doesn't understand her son, but she pauses. She doesn't react, she reflects. She's good at pondering life's mysteries, even when they come in the package of a misbehaving child. Jesus leaves with his parents. They kind of march him back home to Nazareth. They give him some remedial lessons in the commandments, like, hey, Jesus, remember number 5 of the top 10? Honor thy father and mother. Mary does her best, and her son grows in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor. But we've climbed our tree today to look at two perspectives, so a moment to think about Jesus' perspective. Jesus is on that threshold of emerging adulthood, almost, but not quite there. Jesus, in this story, is a young adult some of us might recognize in the mirror or in the family portrait. Eager, idealistic, curious, confident, hopeful, and determined. Now, Luke tells us that Jesus is 12 here. What the text does not say, but we can imagine, is that he is reaching the age of majority or of recognition as an adult in his religious circle. B'nai mitzvah, the coming of age of Jewish boys at 13 and girls at 12, is not yet an established practice in first century Judaism. But I suspect Jesus is on the threshold of what we call today becoming a bar mitzvah, a son of the commandments, one with personal accountability for observing the law. A bar or bat mitzvah is full of questions and is obligated to study biblical passages in depth. So just where else would Jesus be at this time of his life but at the steps of the temple, taking the rare opportunity to dialogue with and to learn from the greatest scholars of the day? Indeed, when he is reproached by his mother, "How could you do this to me?" he is likewise astonished. "Do my parents understand nothing about me? How is this not obvious?" In our era, a new term has surfaced for coming of age called emerging adulthood. It's generally associated with the ages between 18 and 29. And it's understood not as a generational characteristic particular to millennials, but as a new life stage. Nearby in Worcester, Massachusetts, our colleagues at Clark University are spearheading this research, and in December they've just published their latest poll on the American emerging adult. And they find 3 terms to describe this life stage: thriving, struggling, hopeful. Sounds a little bit like emerging Jesus to me. The researchers say life is not easy for emerging adults. We know this. In December, our own WBUR ran a series called Gen Stuck. Ouch. I learned that 30% of young adults are boomeranging back home to the not-so-empty nest, the highest percentage since the 1950s. Merry Christmas, young adults. Here's a present called Fiscal Cliff. Happy New Year. I quote from the Clark Report, "Emerging adults have an unemployment rate that is consistently double the overall rate. Those who have a job usually make very little money for most of their 20s. Nearly all aspire to a college degree, but fewer than a third have attained one by ages 25 to 29. It's not surprising, given these circumstances, that so many of them say they feel stressed, anxious, or depressed," end quote. Hold on, though. Recall the confidence and curiosity and energy of our emerging Jesus. I continue from their report, quoting, "What may be more surprising is that despite the challenges of the emerging adult life stage, most of them remain hopeful that their lives will ultimately work out well. Nearly 90% agree that they are confident that they eventually will get what they want out of life," end quote. Jesus, God with skin on, knows this in-between time. He stands in the threshold right there, and he is present in those silent waiting years. In the biblical text, from age 20 to 30, we know nothing about Jesus' life. We can imagine that he is home preparing, living faithfully, and getting ready to launch into public ministry finally at the age of 30. Young adults, if you're baby boomer or Gen X parents, get a little impatient with your traveling through this emerging life stage, just say, "Hey, I'm emerging right on target with Jesus." Jesus had a hunger for discovery, and so do the young adults I love. The beginning of December, some 36 emerging adults, also called students, gathered here at Marsh Chapel just before finals for a reading retreat, a day set apart for study and reflection. We focused our spiritual practices on one of the masters of this holy temple, Howard Thurman. Each participant at the beginning of the day went around the room declaring the study intent for the day. And it was fascinating to hear the variety of subjects embraced by members of 6 of the schools of our university. One said, "I am making my way through a 500-page tome on international relations and the CIA. Another said, "I am immersed in my reams of Hebrew Bible class notes for the final exam. I am writing a paper about cross-cultural pedagogical implication. I am simulating human voice through a prototype robot I am making," and so on and so on. Fascinating. Finally, these wonderful emerging adults remind me to be a lifelong learner, to appreciate excellence all around. For instance, our ushers right here at Marsh Chapel are superb in hospitality. Each Sunday, they are at our doors with smiles and welcoming information for first-timers. Now, on a Sunday morning, I come up from downstairs, the lower level of Marsh Chapel, and I come up from the side stairs, and I am not in our usher's line of duty. So most weeks, I go out the front door, immediately turn around, open the door to come through, and I say to the usher, "I want my greeting. I'm here for the smile. I want my handshake or hug. I want to start my day by receiving the excellence of your mission." And Charles, 7-year-old Charles, who is the head usher of our balcony, "You just haven't had a Sunday until you've had a Charles smile and a high five." Friends, this day we look back, we look forward, we look from many perspectives. We go out of our way to cross thresholds into places that promise us joy and love and community. Let's go into the new year with hearts as swinging doors, opening to the comfort of God's grace and moving out into the needs of the world. Thanks be to God. Amen.